It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Nick Revel and Andy Hamilton.
Good evening and welcome to the show. Later we'll be looking at the controversial subject of human embryology and some of the very complex moral issues that it throws up. For instance, we'll be asking, at what stage in its development can an insurance salesman be considered a human being? But first, we do have a slight technical problem, I'm afraid, listeners, as my partner, Nick Revel, hasn't actually arrived at the studio. Perhaps he's been held up on the tube. We've heard that there are delays. Apparently there's an escalator working at Leicester Square, and it's attracted thousands of sightseers.
Andy, I'm sorry I'm late.
There you are, Nick. Where have you been?
I was at a Christmas Eve party.
Well, Christmas Eve was last week.
Yes, it was a good party.
Right, so...
Before we start, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take this opportunity quite seriously of wishing all of you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Don't look at me like that, Andy. I'm just enjoying Christmas, okay? Yes. And that's why I'm wearing these sleigh bells, this party hat, this festive tinsel...
And nothing else. Nick, you're completely naked. Look, why don't you go lie down, get a coffee, find some clothes, and come back in a few minutes, all right?
Okay.
All right?
You always get aggressive when I've had a drink.
Nick.
Andy.
Hmm?
I haven't got any clothes on.
Yes, I did mention that, Nick.
You! Give me your clothes!
Now, Nick, come back. Leave the audience alone, Nick. Come,
you bastard! Come. You've got lots of clothes!
Nick, I don't think the Director General wants to give you his clothes.
Give me that. I look good in leather dressing. Oh. I have this. Give me that fur coat!
That's not a fur coat. That's the Commissioner's Alsatian.
Okay, Mr. Harold, stop playing.
Well, the commissioners seem to be dealing with Nick. Thanks very much for dealing with that, Egon.
No problem, Andy.
You're new here, aren't you?
Yes, I used to work in East Germany.
Really?
Yeah, I was president.
Oh, of course, it all makes sense. Egon Krenz, right. Well, fancy you becoming a BBC commissioner.
Well, there's lots of us former dictators working here. The BBC seem to like our methods.
Yeah, really, yeah.
Yes, but they're all in very, very simple, menial jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Imelda Marcos cleans the toilets, and Volvo Castle is on the switchboard, and General Galtieri is head of Radio 1.
Ah. Serves him right. Well, thank you again, Egon, but if you don't mind now, I better get on with the show. Okay, Egon... What are you doing?
You said you wanted to divide the audience into two halves.
Yep, well, that was for the whole pantomime routine. We didn't want them divided by a wall.
You say that now.
Yeah, well, look, please, just put the trowel down, okay? Just leave it alone,
all right? Don't blame me if they all leave.
No, I won't. Thank you, Egon Krenz. Of course, it is quite incredible, the speed of change in Eastern Europe. In fact, it's an interesting statistic that since I started this sentence, Czechoslovakia has had four presidents. So anyway, how was your Christmas?
Oh, not bad, you know.
We had a dreadful Christmas.
Really?
Right. It was our own fault. We left everything far too late. I mean, we didn't even start to think about Christmas shopping until the last weekend in April.
Fine,
Andy. Yeah. What about you? When did you start worrying about Christmas?
Oh, well, I got this outside firm to do all that for me.
Oh, yeah?
Happy Christmas Limited. Yeah, the Christmas consultancy.
Oh,
they take the whole lot off your shoulders, you know.
Mm.
They decide which of your relatives to invite and draw up the list of conversational topics to avoid. Mm. They buy the boxes of Twiglets, eat them for you. They wear the jokey boxer shorts and the furry slippers with the silly claws on.
Yeah.
They've got this special luxury deal, right, which we went for, where you pay a bit more and they send along lookalikes who stand in for you at Christmas dinner and actually talk to your relatives. It worked really well.
That sounds That's brilliant. Mm.
We were a little bit insulted when we found out that our relatives had sent along lookalikes as well. But
I hate the way they've commercialised Christmas. You know, really, do you want to see old-time Christmas? Is all sitting around the log fire watching High Noon on the telly.
And I do note the BBC gets more letters complaining about High Noon not being on anymore at Christmas than on any other subject apart from Noel Edmonds sweaters.
What's so wrong with Noel Edmonds sweaters?
They've got Noel Edmonds inside.
Oh.
Anyway, as a treat for all you High Noon fans out there, here is the climax to that great film.
Darling, listen, please, for me, don't go through with this. Not in our wedding day.
A man's got to do what a man's got to do. Frank Miller and his men are coming to get me. Now, how could I hold my head up in this town as sheriff if I ran?
It'll be 6-1.
I have to fight. Don't you understand? Here they come. Walking down the main street.
You're so brave. If only I had your courage. What's that?
It's called a Gatling gun.
A Gatling gun?
That's right. A rapid-fire machine gun. It'll cut Frank Miller's voice to ribbons in about 5 seconds.
I thought you were going to walk defiantly down the main street and beat them to the draw with your gun. Shoot it up, man to man, bold and brave.
I may be brave, but I'm not an idiot. Anyway, it'd be madness to walk down the main street. I might set off one of the mines.
You lay mines?
Of course.
Isn't that kind of sneaky? I'm not sure the townsfolk will look up to a sheriff who uses machine guns and mines.
Oh, and what would they prefer? Some dumb klutz who walks down the main street with a sign around his neck saying, "Shoot me, I'm gullible." We live in hard times, baby. Come on, Frank Miller, you mother. You're going to get wasted. Come on, scumball, make my day.
This isn't the man I married.
Help me set up this flamethrower, bitch.
No, I won't be a party to this.
You asked for it. Okay, Miller, you're dead meat.
Funny, Nick, I don't remember Gary Cooper incinerating Grace Kelly with a flamethrower in High Noon.
Well, shows what a great film it must be, you know. Every time you come to it, you find something new.
Yeah.
Some important political news has just come in. Mrs. Thatcher has finally agreed to the idea of a common European currency, provided it's her head that goes on the coins.
And scientists have revealed that they decided to call the bug that's sweeping the nation English flu after they observed the virus under a microscope, throwing up lager, singing "Here we go, here we go," and making V signs with antibodies. Yeah, Nick, did you hear about Bernard Matthews' Christmas?
No.
He was kidnapped by animal rights campaigners.
You're kidding.
I'm not. Right? It's gospel, right? Apparently, they took Bernard Matthews to a secret location, plucked all the hair off his body, covered him in bread sauce and stuck an onion up his bum.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No, I'm not criticising. No.
You can pay a lot of money for that kind of thing in Greek. Apparently. I'm all for these animal rights people.
Oh, me too. I'm very pro-animal rights. When you think of the terribly cruel things we do to animals, I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, take show jumping. I mean, that's very cruel. I mean, what could be more cruel than to take a horse and call it Panasonic Video Recorder?
You know, just last week, a horse called Sony Betamax just dropped dead from embarrassment.
Yeah. It's terribly cruel.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, you know, the cruelest thing the human race does to animals is this business of breeding special dogs.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Dogs that are bred purely and specifically for the antisocial, barbaric purpose of belonging to Barbara Cartland. All right, my cousin's an RSPCA officer, right? He says at Battersea Dogs Home, they've got over 300 Pekingese that once belonged to Barbara Cartland, all receiving psychiatric treatment. She used to read her novels to them.
Please, Andy, I don't want to hear any more. It's too distressing.
It's true, Nick. Apparently, if you say the words, Emily felt her heart race as she stared into his coal black gypsy eyes. Those dogs go berserk. Mind you, the best Christmas I ever had was last year when me and Libby went to Africa. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I bet.
It's quite a mixed experience, though. I remember the first day, Libby was... she was a bit shocked.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
You okay, love?
I just wasn't emotionally prepared to see all this suffering. Half-starved bodies lying across your path, a stench of disease, of flies, wailing of tiny babies, this constant tide of crushed, despairing humanity.
Yeah, Heathrow just gets worse, doesn't it?
So you got away in the end, though?
Oh, yeah. The flight was really interesting.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Flight 749. We hope you weren't too inconvenienced by the rather confused scenes at check-in. If any of you were sprayed by the water cannon, just let one of our stewardesses know and she'll try and get that red dye out of your clothes. My name's John Green, and I'm your pilot on this flight. Well, when I say pilot, I'm using the word slightly loosely, as we are in fact in the middle of an industrial dispute at the moment. This plane is being flown by the management. Namely me and Chris Lloyd from marketing. Hello there! But no need to worry, no problems so far. And the flying manual is very clearly worded. If you look out of the window, you'll see that we are a long way up. A very long way up. Not too good at heights myself. Down below us is the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. And we should be arriving in Nairobi at... Well, let's just settle for arriving at Nairobi, shall we? Lunch will be served in a moment. Couldn't keep mine down, I'm afraid. Nervous and coming. Bloody hell, there's a cloud! Sorry about that. Sudden maneuver, ladies and gentlemen. Chris tells me that apparently these planes can fly through clouds. Personally, I would have thought that would have merited a mention in the manual. Just saved us all a fright, but there you go. Enjoy your flight.
Did you land okay then?
Well, luckily, one of the passengers was a Second World War pilot, uh-huh. You know. He hadn't flown a jumbo before, but he thought it seemed to land okay, no problem. Mm. The victory roll was a bit frightening, but... And then we joined up with our safari. Brilliant. On the first day, right, our guide took us to a watering hole in the middle of the bush.
Uh-huh. Okay, now, there's a pride of lions over there. And at the watering hole, see, it's an impala.
Yes.
Now, lions only kill on average one in every seven attempts, but this particular herd of impala has got a lot of young and experienced animals in it who tend to be less alert. So I'm quietly confident that we'll see a kill.
Yes. I can't help noticing that the impala have got lead weights attached to their legs.
Well, obviously.
Well, what do you mean, obviously?
Well, I told you, the lion only kills one in seven attempts, so we've got a very busy schedule.
Look at those beautiful wild horses coming out of the water, hole, Andy.
Yeah.
They're zebra.
I thought zebra had stripes.
Well, yes, but the stripes help them merge into the background, so...
You painted out the stripes.
Just to help the lions pick them out.
Yes, well, I'm sure the lions should be able to pick out a herd of luminous orange zebras. With sandbags tied to their tails.
Honestly, Andy, this is...
It's a scandal.
Look, it's you tourists who create these commercial pressures. You sit at home watching your David Attenborough films and you come out here and immediately expect to see lions savaging impala all the time or elephants rogering like Rod Stewart on Heat.
You don't expect to see nature being interfered.
No, absolutely. That's
all
right.
All right, so you don't want to see a kill. Fine. Well, watch some rhino instead. Over there, see a pair of rhinos.
My God, they're magnificent rhinos. But, Andy...
Yeah.
I think they're going to meet.
Oh, yes.
They are. This is incredible.
Yes. And this is entirely natural.
Entirely.
You haven't set this up in any way.
Not at all.
I see. So it's a proven scientific fact, is it, that to lure the male, the female rhino dons a black frilly nightie and nails her own feet to the ground? How do you explain that?
Well, perhaps she's the submissive type.
So it's all a bit commercialised, then?
No, not all of it. No, the Maasai tribesmen still retain their dignity and culture, you know. And I think the most memorable thing we saw was them performing the dance of the young Maasai warrior who has lost his credit card. That was very moving. Later, we'll be looking at the newly formed water companies who've warned that they will run the industry along strictly commercial lines, and that now that Britain's water is private property, fish will be evicted if they get behind with the rent.
And we'll also be looking at rumours concerning a Claire Short strippogram scandal. Apparently, she used to dress up as a nurse and perform
acts. No, that's enough. You can't go any further with that.
Why not?
Well, because there is such a thing as the law of libel in this country.
Yeah, I've never really understood why we need those libel laws.
Well, we need libel laws, Nick, to protect the individual. I mean, if there weren't libel laws, right, there'd be nothing to stop me standing up and saying anything. You know, I mean, I could say something like, oh, I don't know. Say, Mrs. Thatcher is pro-South Africa because Dennis has lots of business contacts there and because deep down she doesn't like black people, you know. Which is obviously untrue.
Yeah. The audience
are applauding this to reinforce so how laughable. Untrue and yeah. How laughable. They're laughing at how ludicrous an idea that is.
Yeah.
But thankfully the libel law stops something like that being said.
Yeah. So it'd be anarchy without them then, wouldn't it, really?
Exactly, anarchy. I mean, there'd be nothing to stop people just circulating the most outrageous lies, like, Rupert Murdoch and Robert Maxwell love exercising power because they've probably got very small penises, you know. Or that Jeffrey Archer is too stupid to ever feel embarrassed, you know. It's, you know.
Oh, I guess it. So what's the definition of libel, then?
Well, something is a libel, right,
mm-hmm.
if it's deemed to be false, and to have lowered a person's esteem in the eyes of right-minded people.
Lowered a person's esteem in the eyes of right-minded people.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to libel Bobby Robson, then?
Well, obviously, the libel laws don't cover someone like Bobby Robson. No law could.
No.
But basically, Bobby Robson apart, you know, all citizens are protected under the libel laws.
Uh-huh. So I can't say Richard Branson is a git, then?
You've done it now. You too.
Eh?
You called Branson a git. I mean, you'd definitely sue you for that.
Yeah, well, he'd probably sue both of us, wouldn't he?
Could you explain the use of the word us in that context?
Well, we're partners.
It was you who said he was a git.
Well, I've heard you call him a git.
I'm sorry, I think you must be confusing me with somebody else. I tell you, Nick, he could take you for millions in damages. I don't know what made you say it.
You told me to.
Rubbish.
Chuck it in as an ad lib, you said. You set me up.
Now, why would I do a spiteful thing like that?
I don't know. Maybe to get back at me for all the times I've jeered at you for being so short. Like that time when you were wearing your football kit and I pretended to mistake you for a Sabutio player. Or the time you fell asleep round at Guy's place and I painted you brown and handed you round as a gingerbread man. Or was it that time I told Pamela Borders you were a vibrator?
Yes. Do you honestly think that I would let juvenile little jokes like that get to me? Let's just get on, shall we? All right.
Do you really think Branson will sue me?
It's quite likely. He'll certainly sue you if you libel him again. So I'd just watch your step if I was you. Okay, some more important political news, Justin. The government has announced radical new legislation to deal with the trade in human kidneys. This will consist of a share issue in British Kidneys PLC, backed up by an advertising slogan, "Get a steak in Britain's kidney pie."
But first...
Oh, hang on, Nick.
What?
Just been handed this travel update. Okay, right. We better read it out. All right.
Here's a message for anyone flying out of Heathrow this afternoon or this evening. All flights are delayed due to air traffic congestion over Europe and fog at many airports, though I blame that git Branson.
Oh, you bastard!
And now, Radio 4 presents, in association with Michael Knighton Enterprises and Leon Britton Beauty Products, The Christmas Thriller.
It all began so innocently one afternoon in my flat. My girlfriend, Laura, and I were watching the Beatles About Christmas special. Jeremy Beadle was pretending to feed someone's guide dog to a crocodile. As the blind man collapsed with a heart attack, I switched over to BBC. It was a Dennis Potter play. To bring home the cruel obscenity of man's sexual exploitation of women, a girl was having her breasts massaged with Marmite. I switched it off and started a conversation. God, I hate this week between Christmas and New Year. Seems to drag on longer than a miniseries starring Jane Seymour. I stood up. Something was wrong. I seemed strangely taller. Then I realised I was standing on 6 inches of discarded walnut shells. This was no use. To relieve the tedium, I decided to go into work. I worked at London Transport as creative director in the excuses department. I knew not many people would bother to come to work today, so I could use the peace and quiet to work on some really imaginative excuses for the district line, like sycamore seeds on the line, or a warthog under a train. As I stepped outside, I noticed there was a strange atmosphere. The street seemed eerily deserted. I spotted my neighbour, Ted, who was filling a skip with satsuma peel.
Morning, Dave. Streets are quiet today.
Oh, no, Ted, I've never seen a street so deserted.
Aye, it's not often you see tumbleweed in Clapham. Must be this hot weather. Look at all this cherry blossom.
Oh, no, cherry blossom at Christmas. And it's over 70 degrees. Doesn't that strike you as peculiar?
Not really. Michael Fish said it'd be cold and wet.
Ted said he'd walk with me, and we set off in the sweltering heat, past the piles of Christmas rubbish. The black bin bags bursting at the seams with walnut shells, satsuma peel, half-chewed twiglets, and Jeffrey Archer novels in half-opened wrapping paper. Suddenly, I saw something which made my blood freeze.
Look, Ted! Over there, a skeleton.
Well, there's always skeletons standing at the bus stop.
No, not those skeletons, that skeleton there, on the steps of the police station, see?
It was the remains of a paper boy, his bleached bones crushed beneath the weight of a Sunday Times. We dashed into the police station and ran up to the desk sergeant.
Sergeant, there's a dead body on your steps.
Oh, no. Fancy a satsuma?
He must have been there weeks.
No, Boxing Day it was.
Look, I demand immediate police action.
Why? You're not a mason, are you?
Hang on. You say he died Boxing Day. You mean you've let him rot for... What's the date today?
I glanced at my watch to check the date, and the date leapt at my eyes. It was... the 19th of May.
Well, that's it, Ted. It all falls into place, don't you see? The heat, the cherry blossom, the skeleton. This is May, but for some strange reason, everyone thinks it's still the week between Christmas and New Year. I know it's an incredible story, Ted, and I expect you'll find it hard to believe.
No, not at all. I'm a Sunday Sport reader.
All right. But we must do something.
I know. Perhaps if the Prime Minister made some sort of broadcast, people might listen.
It seemed a bit far-fetched to me, but it was worth a try. We ran to Downing Street and burst into number 10, past the sleeping policemen in their furry slippers. But then we saw the Prime Minister, sitting, catatonic, motionless.
My God, Dave, what is this terrible sickness?
I don't know, Ted. I think it attacks the brain. It's some sort of Yuletide spongiform disease.
We've got to try and bring the Prime Minister round.
Yeah, try slapping around the face.
Right.
OK, my turn now.
The slapping doesn't seem to be achieving anything.
Oh, I don't know. I know, but we'll never get an opportunity like this again, OK? Right, you'll go.
OK.
You know what puzzles me is, where does this sickness come from? Is it a natural phenomenon, or is it the creation of some evil mind?
It's the latter, Dave.
Yeah, I thought it might be, because I would think... Where did that voice come from?
Over here.
It's coming from the fruit bowl.
That's right.
Oh, my God, a talking satsuma.
But that's absurd. How could a satsuma talk?
Haven't you heard of the evolution? We satsumas have developed the ability to think rationally.
What, like humans?
I said to think rationally. For years now, we have been releasing a strong sedative drug into your bloodstream every Christmas, making you slow up, sleepy, and eventually comatose. Soon mankind will perish on its sofas, wearing its new jumpers, listening to Richard Cleveland plays Paranoid Weather LPs.
You cruel bastard.
You humans cannot resist us. We are just too roarish.
Actually, I quite fancy a satsuma.
Don't say.
You are hopelessly outnumbered. The whole of satsuma kind is rising at one baby orange. And you, Dave Stroud, you're mine. I've been waiting for this day. Ever since you cooked duck a la horse and murdered my mother.
How can you harm me? At that moment, a satsuma hit me full in the face.
Oh dear, hell, a jumping satsuma. Marvelous thing, evolution, isn't it?
Ted grabbed my hand and we ran. And I'm still running. And they're still out there. Even now, those satsumas are lurking in that fruit bowl on the sideboard behind you, plotting, scheming, waiting for a moment of weakness. Don't let them get you. Don't let the evil satsumas get you. Watch out for the evil satsumas.
That was Day of the Satsuma, written by Giles Simpson, author of Here Come the Killer Peas and Night of the Living Bread.
Well, that's all from the Million Pound Radio Show Christmas special. In our next show, we'll be examining the recent policy of releasing psychiatric outpatients. Why are the government pursuing this program? Why are all these psychologically very disturbed people being returned to the community? And most important, why are they all driving BMWs in the fast lane of the M4?
And sports. Bobby Robson has defended his strategy for the World Cup finals in Italy. He says he'll be sticking with the same 22 tried and tested excuses, as they've never let him down in previous tournaments. Thank you and good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show Christmas Special was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacobs. It was produced by Paul Mayhew Archer.